Hello and welcome back to the podcast for innovative leaders. Human innovation is what it is all about, and human innovation is a combination of innovation and leadership. Today's guest is Jam Fuller. Jam has lived a colorful global life, from barefoot backpacker to corporate leader, fire dancer and traditional tattooist, kindergarten teacher to motorcycle courier, masseuse and reflectory to laborer and travel consultant. Now his time is partner and father, coach, facilitator, retreat leader. He's the author of the recently published book, The Artful Conscious Communication for Thoughtful Men, and can be seen delivering this TED Talk on YouTube. In our conversation, we cover leadership, how managers can lead teams with a human-centered approach, how employees can lead up the line, and a lot of more leadership topics. Please welcome to the show, Jam Fuller. Hello, Jam. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, and so I'm actually really excited to be on your show, dude. When we first met, I don't know, we had a chat maybe a month ago or something.
Yeah.
And your take on everything that I'm passionate about in terms of leadership and, you know, innovative leadership and how to be effective, etc. I got excited, dude. I got off our chat, and I was like, I can't wait for this interview. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, equally on my side. I think we have a lot of things in common from, say, world perspective, but as well when it comes to leadership and corporate. And that's what we are going to talk about: leadership, communication, culture, all these things. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit more about yourself. So who are you and how did you get to where you are today?
So my name's Jem, obviously. I live down in a coastal town, a surfing town down here on the coast of Victoria in Australia. And currently, so starting with the present day, and I'll backtrack a little bit, but currently I work as an executive coach, facilitator, international retreat leader, writing more. I'm after the first book, I'm now writing more, which is good, and speaker. So that's where I'm at now. But it's been a very unorthodox pathway or journey to get to where I am. In the middle of it all, which is probably more pertaining to this conversation and to your audience, I spent 8 years in a suit and a tie, which was very, very strange for me because prior to that, I was anything but corporate. In fact, I was anti-establishment. I was a punk living in squats in London. I was a barefoot backpacking hippie wandering around Southeast Asia and Central Asia for the best part of a decade. And I was anti-establishment. In my younger adult life, I was very anti-establishment. And so funnily enough, when I became a father, when I got married and became a father, I had to get a job to provide for my kids. And I'd been traveling so much, I got a job with an international travel company and had quite a successful, it was only 8 years, but quite a successful 8 years in terms of the traditional get promoted, and ended up in senior leadership in that corporate world. And what I loved about it, my takeaway, you know, one of the reasons I'm so grateful for my journey and my time in senior leadership, it wasn't the number of zeros on the spreadsheet, and it wasn't the fact that it was $100 million division that I was bought into and responsible for. It wasn't the numbers; it was the people, it was the humans. Yeah. I loved it, and I was very lucky to work for a company that invested in some good quality leadership development. So we weren't just taught how to manage and strategize and make more money. I mean, they were trying to get us to do that as well. But we were taught about human behavior, neuro-linguistic programming and human behavioral profiling and coaching, you know, how to get the best out of your people. And all of that human behavior stuff I found really fascinating. So I had decided towards the end of my time with them that I would like to go and study that more deeply and start my own coaching practice. And then there's a whole story around the midlife crisis and losing my job and my marriage and my house, short-tracking that. That happened, started my coaching practice almost 10 years ago, and I haven't looked back since then.
Awesome. So many nuggets. I would love to go the route, like, let's talk about the barefoot backpacking things, but let's start with the leadership first.
Yeah, sure.
So working with leaders in what you're doing right now, and as well being a leader in the corporate, what are the things, if we link this to innovation, which this podcast is all about, what are the things you have seen and still see that helps innovation to flourish in organization when it comes to leadership?
Well, disruption is the first thing that comes to mind, and that's why I think the last few years have been actually a massive opportunity, because it was globally disruptive. And I'm doing my best to leverage off that in the relationships where I have some influence. So the executives that I coach and mentor, the executives that listen to me, I'm doing everything I can to encourage and empower them to change the state of play. And specifically what I mean about that is that the post-industrial revolution culture of corporate, which is all about net profit growth, get the results, teach your people how to do the task really, really well and be as productive and efficient as possible, that is becoming antiquated and irrelevant and ineffective. And thankfully, now with the change of services and the way that we provide the service that we provide, the way that we add value to the lives that we lead, it has to become more and more human centric, which is a good thing. And then especially after the last few years, you know, leaders are now being forced to face the reality that it's about the intrinsic motivation of the people on their team, not the extrinsic carrot and stick. You know, we can't get away with saying, well, I'll just pay you more if you produce more, or you'll get in trouble if you don't. That's not working anymore. So I'm doing what I can to help leaders get better at becoming more human-centric.
Yeah. And it's, I love this because I 100% agree that in this time, we're in 2023 now, There's no way that an organization can survive long term if you do this top down approach all the time. And hey, I'm telling you what you do, and you switch off your brain. It doesn't work anymore.
No, but there are still a lot of, and I would say actually the majority of organizations are stuck in this paradigm. And I understand, you know, the bigger the ship, the harder it is to change the direction of the ship. So you and I are actually talking about disrupting and innovating and changing not just one organization, but international culture. So it's a big task, but necessity is the mother of all invention, right? Yeah. And companies are starting to fall over. Companies are starting to fall apart. My clients who have actually thrived through COVID have wonderful culture, wonderful human-centric systems that are set up where it's all about the people, and the people feel safe to innovate. They feel safe to have crazy ideas. You know, but this is something that they've created. That didn't happen accidentally, you know?
Yeah.
So I think the change, but also the change is you know, some of the symptoms of the old ways, and this is another thing I'm passionate about. My corporate clients, so remembering that I'm coaching CEOs and executive teams on how to then help the rest of the organization get on board culturally, they are still caught in the chasing their own tail around productivity and time. They're all still massively busy, quote unquote. You know, the deadlines, there's always way too much on their to-do list on a day-to-day, week-to-week, quarter-to-quarter, financial year basis. There's always way too much. They're still working too hard. And they still say to me, oh, it's just a busy period. And I say, no, it's not a busy period. This is ongoing. And I think that needs to change, because we've got this old mentality that everything, we're in a hurry. We've got to quickly get that result. We've got to quickly make that more money. We've got to quickly get that deal. We need to do more faster, better, quicker. And that needs to change. because that's not sustainable. And people are burning out. There's mass resignations. People have had enough.
Yeah, hugely.
So, so somehow we need to change the cultural paradigm and just slow down a little bit. Focus on quality, not quantity. You know, anyway.
I'm laughing because you're saying that to a German. It's like, that doesn't work with an Excel brand. No, but I agree. The tricky thing I see that we're all grown up, at least the ones who are grown up in corporate and have had success. You got promoted due to certain ways that you delivered fast, that you delivered on time, that you over-delivered. And then you step up inside of the corporate or inside of any organization. And then you're building patterns for you to decide what is the right thing to do because you're getting promoted because you worked hard. You're getting promoted because you pushed things through. And then when you're in a leadership position where people are reporting to you, you just do the same because you have been successful doing that. And you're pushing as well your team members to do the same, to push harder, to work harder. And it's not about you stepping back, like you just said, slowing down and having a thought of what is really needed right now. What does this person that is working with me in my team that is looking tired, what does this person right now really need? Most probably not a push. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, look, it's true. You know, we get promoted because we were good on the tools and we got results. So we get promoted and then we are expected to lead a team. Actually, we're not expected to lead. We're expected to manage a team and manage them to get the same results that we got. And then if we somehow accidentally figure out how to do that, we get promoted again. And now you're two levels away from the front line, from the customer, and you're expected to manage managers, to manage teams to get the same results that you got. You know, and it's getting trickier and trickier, but there's very little investment in leadership development, in teaching our leaders how to coach, how to get the best out of their people. And in the past, we could get away with this because it was, like I said, this post-industrial revolution of you turn up, you clock on at 9 o'clock, you clock off at 5, and you do as you're told, and you pack as many boxes as you can pack so that you get paid enough to feed your family. You know, but times are changing. You know, there are kids out there becoming millionaires because they're good at creating content.
Yeah.
The game's changing, you know, and so, and automation and AI and everything's changing. So all those jobs that used to be what we would manage, it'll be 100% automated before we know it. So how do humans remain relevant then in a corporate setting? How do we remain relevant? We've got to come back and focus on the human element. That's our joker card against the automation and the AI. Agreed. Is our humanness, right? So how do we encourage our leaders, senior leaders, to shift their focus and learn how to encourage, create environments that are conducive for our people to expand into their potential creatively and from a human perspective. You know, I think it's a really important mission that our leaders should be focused on.
Yeah. One thing I have experienced helping organizations to innovate is when we talk about leadership, that is often the leaders that are not leading to, let's say, empower the team and really focus on the individuals and lead as most probably that you and I think about proper leadership, that when they're only focusing on managing, that's often because of their own insecurity and their own thought patterns from the past. What did you have this experience as well? Have you experienced that people are basically having these patterns because they're just insecure with themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you could apply that. You know, what you've just said now, Jens, you could apply that to so many aspects of human life, so many situations where we don't give all of ourselves to a moment, or we don't even try, or we come into January 2023 and there are people who are too scared to say, this year could be my best year yet. They're too scared to say that because of the self-doubt and the self-thing, and it might be just another terrible year and it might be hard and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, individuals, we get in our own way. 100%, we get in our own way. It's interesting. I was running a workshop yesterday for a group of clinic owners, you know, so physiotherapists and osteopaths, podiatrists, you know, chiropractors, you know, so people who run clinics, health clinics. And I was talking, I was sharing with them a methodology on how to run a team session and how to create an environment where the people felt safe to actually lean into 2023 and say, do you know what? I'm going to have a crack. I'm going to have a go. I'm going to try and see if I can make 2023 the best year yet. Mm. And the, I was teaching them how to have a conversation with their people one-on-one on a human level and to try and explore and seek to understand with the individuals that report to them, what is their intrinsic motivation? What do they care about? Where is the joy in their life or the contentment in their life? Anyway, so I was going through this workshop and I asked, you know, does anyone have any questions or concerns? And one of the attendees, he said, I just don't know if I've got the courage to have a conversation that real with my people.
Yeah.
He said, I feel very comfortable to talk about KPIs and, you know, their ability on the tools, you know, as a physiotherapist, the technical stuff. I'm happy to talk about the technical stuff with them, but I don't know if I've got the courage to talk with them on that deeper human level, you know, and I think that's quite common. And so, and just quickly for your listeners, if they're curious, what I suggested to this business owner, I said to him, if you can take a step back and you can create a culture, an environment where they understand what you care about, and you can explain to them this journey that when you were a university graduate, you were a brand new physiotherapist. And at that time, the meaning in your work was to be a good physiotherapist. You wanted to be the best physio you could be, and you wanted to help your clients. And that was the meaning in your work. And then you got good at that. And then you became a team leader and you were like, oh, wow, I feel a bit of meaning. If I can get my team to be good physios and then the clients get a good experience, then I've got meaning in my work. And I said, now you're a business owner. You've got your own physiotherapy clinic. And I said, if you can be vulnerable and share with your people, do you know what? Now, when I see you've had an awesome day, you know, when I see you smiling and skipping out the door and saying, wow, what a great day. I love my job. That's the meaningful part of my work. So the purpose behind my work, my meaning to my work now is more about creating an environment that is conducive and supportive to you living your best life professionally and personally, you know? And so when you can set up that environment, then the team knows, they're like, wow, my boss actually cares about me, you know, and you'll see the results go through the roof. And if you're worried about profit, you watch the profits go up.
Yeah.
If you're worried about productivity, you watch productivity go up. You watch the sick days go down, you know, so all of the measurables end up showing you the benefits of this, but you have to trust that now as a leader, you can't just push for results. You've got to seek to understand who the people are in your team and what can you do to help them live their best life.
Yeah, can't agree more. If we say, okay, I already hear a couple of listeners thinking in their mind, yeah, of course, if you're a pediatrician and you have 5 people, no problem. I have 2,000 people. I have 50,000 people, like big corporate where I can do this for myself with 5 people, no problem. But how do I do this? How do I change this, let's call it culture, in the organization with 20,000 people, with 500 people? Even if it's, let's say, 50 people, it's not that easy anymore. How could we get people doing that and think about how they can get there?
Okay. So if you're in a leadership position and you have 2,000 people in the organizational chart underneath you. You don't have 2,000 people reporting to you, right? You've probably got 6 people reporting to you. Do the work with those 6. Then teach those 6 people how to do the work with the 10 people that report to them. Then teach those 10 how to do the work that the 10, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it has to flow like this. You work with the people that you are in direct relationship with. That's the primary part of it. There's a secondary part, which I think is awesome. And if you are in a position where there's 2,000 people under you in the org chart, you are in a position of responsibility, great responsibility. As you know, I know you feel the pressure. You go home every night going, I've got the responsibility here and the pressure. I was about to swear on your podcast. I'm an Aussie, but I didn't swear because
that's
I wasn't sure.
That's fine. I said in the beginning, I love the Aussie accent.
Okay. So like if you've got 2,000 people under you, you go home and you're like, fuck, right? Get me that fucking bottle of wine now. Right? So, but also at the same time as there being this massive responsibility, it's a massive opportunity. A massive opportunity. And some great leaders that I've come across through my years who have that many people under them, they are so clever with just a little investment of their time, skipping all of the levels in an organizational chart. So it's worth its weight in gold. If you pick up the phone and you call someone on the front line who you've never met, but you heard through the grapevine that they had a win, and you pick up the phone and you ring them and you go, hey, it's Jem here. I know we haven't met, but I heard about that win you had last week and I just wanted to acknowledge you for it and say, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you hang up the phone. That took 2 minutes of your time. That 2 minutes is worth its weight in gold. You know that person's going to tell everyone they come in contact with in the company that the company CEO or the GM of their department rang them?
Yeah.
This is how you can fast track culture like this, you know.
It's quite cool. I worked in IKEA, which is the furniture company, and the founder of IKEA was always saying, as a leader, you need to be the good example. You can't expect from anyone leadership-wise something if you're not doing it yourself. And that's, I agree 100%. If you are the GM, the CEO, or in the executive leadership team, you should do that. Because that will reflect as well through all the other levels inside of the organization, because they say, oh, if he's doing that, I should do this as well. This is a good example. The people are reacting like this. They hear the great stories. And then people start testing and trying that as well. And then it's infecting the others.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I read a really good article through Forbes magazine recently about the CEO of Mercedes, Formula One Mercedes. Is he Austrian or German? I think he's German.
Yeah, German.
Anyway, he does the same thing. You know, when he first came in, his expectations of excellence are ridiculous. But when he went in there, he went into the pit stop toilets, the Mercedes toilets, and with the cleaner, and he cleaned the toilet and showed the cleaner, this is how clean the toilets need to be all the time. And he did it.
Yeah.
You know, so, cool. Yeah, it's a nice example of that, you know.
Yeah. We how do we get more organizations than just a few into that? I see like you said, there's a huge divide. There are companies which have leaders inside of the organization who just get it. And there are companies who are in the rat race of, let's save cost as much as possible. We need to increase the profit. We need to deliver to the shareholders. How do we change that?
You know, those things are true, i.e. we need to deliver to the shareholders. That's true. It's just about how do we go about doing that. That's what needs to change, you know. And so to answer your question, I don't know, man. I think that, you know, massive change, like I said earlier, massive change only comes from massive pain or disruption.
Yeah.
And so now is a time of disruption. And I don't know what it's been like in Europe. We've felt the effects of what they call, quote unquote, the Great Resignation. We have felt the effects of that in some of the sectors here in Australia, not all sectors, but some sectors, hospitality, for example, people have just been quitting.
Yeah.
But in America, it's been a real thing. There have been people just quitting their jobs left, right, and center. So there's been organizations that have been feeling the pain of that. Here in Australia, because we were locked down for so long and people were working in isolation for so long, and that has negative effects on well-being psychologically and emotionally. So organizations were having to confront that as well, because people were getting sick and falling apart. Suicide rates went up. It was pretty tragic. But it's only when things get really dire that we then kind of react, and that's scary, because this is a little bit of a side topic, but it's a bit scary because it's only when global warming gets to the point of probably too late that then everyone will jump up and go, oh no, we should do something about this. And people have been screaming out for 50 years that we should do something about this. So I don't know really, Jens, I don't know an easy way to do it. But I do know, I've been on a lot of podcasts over the last year, and I do know that there is a groundswell of people talking about this, having conversations about this. And, bit by bit. So whoever listens to this podcast, take this conversation and have it with the people you work with. You talk about it.
Yeah.
And talking, having conversations, conscious conversations about things that matter. It might seem like, oh, it's just talk, there's no action, it doesn't do anything. Actually, conversations are powerful, because the more we talk about something, we create cultural change and groundswell, and then it kind of filters into our systems and our institutions.
Yeah. Now, I would add to that, and it doesn't matter if you are a manager or in a leadership position where you officially have responsibility leading a team. I think it's as well the other way around, that if you're not happy with the leader that is leading you, with the manager and how the manager is treating you, do the same. Reflect that back, and maybe not in a bad way that you push. It's more about reflecting to the manager what you feel, what you think about, and what you're expecting from a manager. What I've seen that often this expectation settings, sometimes you do this when you start in a new team. Hey, what are the expectations between each other? But then you are not touching it for 10 years. Yeah. And things are changing. And people feel, especially now, people come back to the office. I don't know how it is in Australia, but in Europe now, a lot of organizations go back to the office. Pandemic is over. There are a lot of discussions. But they come back into environment, they haven't been there for 2 years, plus 2 years. They haven't been observed in the way that they have been observed before. So it feels almost threatened to come back into the organization and sit next to your manager, who can look over your shoulder what if you're scrolling on the internet or whatever you are doing. So it's also reflecting that back as an employee to whoever your leader is, to say, hey, that's not okay, and I'm not okay with that.
Yeah. Again, I couldn't agree more. I call it leading up the line. You can influence up the line, and if you're clever about the way that you frame the conversation. So anytime you go into a conversation with someone, before you go in to try and influence them, have a think about what's their perspective? What are their outcomes? What are their intentions? What's going to make them look good? What are they hoping for? And that can even be a conversation with the person that you report to. So the person up the line from you can be, hey, I'm curious, what are the pressures on you to perform? What outcomes are you really hoping for? What's going to make you look good to your boss? And they'll tell you, they'll say, well, I need to hit this target and this target and this target. And I need you to do this, this, and this. And you go, hey, I've been thinking about it. I can help you do that even more. I can help you if you want. And I think I've got a pretty good relationship with the people in our team. I think I can get them on board, but I've got some ideas on how we can help you be successful. And your leader is going to be like, I'm all ears now. Tell me.
Normally, at least.
Normally. Normally, yeah. If they're not, you know, Houston, we've got a problem. But generally speaking, right? Generally speaking, if you say, if you genuinely ask them, what are the outcomes or the KPIs that they're trying to hit, and you say, I want to help you do that, they'll be like, oh, that's music to my ears. Thank you. And then you say to them, I want to help you get the best out of us. So I've got some ideas for you. I'm just going to give you the hot tip, you know, A, B, and C. We perform best in these situations. If you can set this situation up for us or communicate to us in this way or support us with accountability in this way, right? If you can do that, you yeah. watch the performance from this team go through the roof.
100%.
You know, so you can lead up the line for sure, but you just need to you need to put the context of the conversation in that you want to help that person be successful.
Yeah, I love that if you focus on helping and not just pushing or leading or reflecting back how bad you are, because right now it feels a little bit, I mean, specifically on social media, you see it quite a bit, that we are all centered, or human intention is, attention, not intention, is focused on the negativity. Here's something bad. Mm. China is this. US is this. Wherever you are in the world, there's always the bad thing is happening. But we're not focusing yeah. on the good. And I like that very much. Like, how can I help you is already the first step into a direction to open up a conversation, open up a thought in another person. Maybe the leader was not ready or is not ready in that point in time to say, to open up. But if you just ask this question, how can I help you? Maybe you get the answer like, no, nothing right now, I'm fine. But then the leader might go back home and say, like, hey, the person is really interesting to help me. What does it mean? What could I tell that person? Maybe come back a day later.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, and different humans, different behavioral styles have different ways of receiving and processing and digesting information and then deciding and taking action. Some people are on the spot and some people need some time. So yeah, of course, there's going to be different ways that people react to that. But certainly if you approach any conversation with the intention for the greater good, you know, so I want to help you be successful. You're my boss. You know, if you're happy and successful, my life's easier.
Yeah.
You know, I want to help you. If you go into a conversation genuinely from that perspective, you've got a way better chance of influencing some positive change than if you go up to your boss and get the courage up and say, I've just come to tell you a few things. The way you treat us like that is not okay. And the way you do that is not okay. And if you keep doing that, I'm out. Yeah. I'm just going to quit, right? Yeah. Well, good on you for being strong and standing up and having some boundaries, but you've got a way less chance of influencing change. Your leader's just going to cross their arms and dig their heels in and become more resolute.
Yeah, agree.
So what have you achieved? You know, nothing. So I it's interesting. I think, I mean, and this is why I love coaching leaders and people working in corporate teams and the smaller businesses that I coach as well, is that people get this, and when they start to practice it, it's a bit foreign to begin with. They're like, oh, this feels weird. But after some time of practicing this level of conscious communication, they start getting better results. The relationships all improve, and the quality of life improves. So when you've got a team of people who are experiencing a higher quality of life, I guarantee you, you're getting better results from them.
Yeah. Agree.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your book, The Art of Conscious Communication for Thoughtful Men. How did you come up with this title first? And then talk us a little bit through, for whom is it? What do people get out of the book?
Yeah, sure. Initially, the book was The Art of Conscious Communication. And it wasn't necessarily for men. I was writing for anybody.
Yeah.
And so conscious communication, quite simply, communication for me, and when I have this conversation with people, everyone gets it. They're like, yeah, right. Communication underpins our ability to be successful in every aspect of our life, right? In your personal relationship with the person you love the most, your dearest sweetheart, It only falls, it starts to fall apart or get challenged in miscommunication.
Yeah.
You both love each other. You love each other to bits, but it's in the miscommunication where it can start to be tested. So in any of your relationships, your ability to have an idea and then manifest that idea into reality is 100% in your ability to communicate it. If you can't communicate that idea, it is nothing. Einstein could have had all of his wonderful genius understandings of the mechanics of the universe, but if he couldn't communicate the theory of relativity, no one would have ever known.
Mm.
Right? So communication and also communication is the bridge of connection. It's the bridge that saves us from isolation. And on the deepest of evolutionary levels, as a species, we need each other. You know, we are, by virtue of the way that we survived through evolution, we are a social creature. We yeah. survive in community. And without communication, there's no community. Right? So I've been very passionate about communication because I see that it's an opportunity and we can improve. And when you look at what's happening around the world with the political and, you know, the divisive natures of derision and this, you know, the red and blue, the pro-life, pro-choice, the pro-vax, anti-vax, the whole thing, the split, the divide, which is, you know, a manipulation to whatever, we could talk about that. But I'm watching people who have different ideas, which in itself is necessary. We have to have diversity. But I'm watching these people and the quality of the communication has deteriorated to the point yeah. of it being almost imbecilic. They're just shouting at each other and canceling each other on Twitter. And it's ridiculous because it's not actually evolving the situation at all. So why did I write the book? I believe we need to focus back on communication. So the art of conscious communication, conscious really quite simply meaning the more conscious we are of something, the more aware we are of it. So my idea behind that is that when we are conscious of the communication itself, and communication is about creating something to be common, it's a sharing, it's a coming togetherness. So when we're more aware of the communication itself, we can be better in our part of that process. So that's the conscious communication part. And I was writing the book and I engaged a book writing mentor here in Australia and she was giving me some advice and she said, I love the manuscript. It's great, but you need to pick an audience because it's too broad. And yeah. if you pick an audience, you're more likely people will pick it up off the shelf. And she said, I reckon men really need this now, this stuff around communication. And I agree with her because, you know, for a whole host of reasons, which if we have time, I can explain. But so I wrote the book for men. But funnily enough, because it's a kind of self-help book, it's mainly women that pick it up off the shelf. So females buy the book, read the book. I'm getting lots of emails from around the world from women saying, thank you for writing the book. It helps me be a better mother to my sons and a better partner to my fella and whatever. But now I'm giving the book to him, whoever that is, and I'm trying to get him to read it. So yeah, that's how the book came about.
Yeah, love that. And at least I can only speak for myself. If I talk with my wife and look into the communication patterns, I'm definitely the worst communicator.
Yeah. But isn't it funny? Because you're actually a really good communicator in this context.
Yeah.
Right? But when it's emotional and close to the heart, we trip up, right?
Yeah. It's the work and the kind of the corporate education I got most probably that helped me to communicate fairly okay in this settings, but at home it's like, yeah, I have nothing to say.
Oh, because it's about vulnerability and intimacy and feelings. And you and I, as are most men of our generation in Europe, Australia and America, we are products of a culture. We are products of an upbringing. And we were born into a patriarchal structure, all of us. And a patriarchal structure is a structure of dominance.
Hmm.
So to succeed in life, to survive, you need to win. You need to dominate. You need to get that promotion. You need to get to the top. And that starts in the playground. Actually, it starts before the playground because it starts with the parents saying to the little boy, don't cry. Don't cry like a girl. Man up, toughen up, suck it up, harden up, we tell our boys. So our boys grow up feeling like they need to excommunicate themselves from their emotional self. So is it any wonder that we end up with generations of men who don't know how to access their feelings, or if they do, they're deeply internalized and they've got no idea how to communicate them? Right?
Huge. Yeah, I will put the link to the book and of course to everything you do as well into the show notes. So I can highly recommend everyone have a look at the book. It's such an important topic as well when we talk about corporate innovation. If you are capable of communicating as the thoughtful man or male or female, it doesn't matter. I think it helps organizations to thrive when it comes to leadership, and that then in return as well gets the organizations thriving. We'd love to go to the last part of the podcast where I ask a couple of questions that I ask every guest. Jem, if you could work with a project that is impacting every human being on earth, what project would you choose to work with and why? Very simple question.
Well, maybe it's front of mind for me because it's on topic with what we're talking about. Yeah. But if I could work with a global project to change the structure and the culture of the corporate and government world such that we validated and revered and honored and respected and needed the feminine wisdom, the human centricness, the expanded awareness that the feminine energy brings. And I just need to clarify this and say that males have access to feminine energy. I'm not talking about men and women. This is not a gender thing.
Yeah.
This is an energy thing. If I could work on a project to dismantle the current patriarchal structure, because at the moment, Jens, what's the point? What is the point of making sure that we have equity, equal opportunity, and we have enough female leaders, which we need, but what's the point of putting female leaders into a structure where the only way they can be successful is to be masculine and dominate? Agreed. That defeats the purpose. So I think that we need to change that structure. And mate, if you and I got some grant and a handful of amazing people, we could work on that project together.
Yeah, so if anyone is out there who wants to give us a couple of grants, let us know.
yeah.
Little plug. Next question. What advice would you give to a young innovator that's just getting started?
I saw this in a quote yesterday. And it's something that I believe already anyway, but the quote was nice. If the path in front of you is clear, it's probably not your path.
Love that.
It's probably somebody else's path because it's already been made. So if you're a young innovator, back yourself, trust yourself. It's scary, right? Because you're going to, by definition of innovation, you're going to come up with stuff that's never been come up with before. And that's the genius. But because no one's ever done it before, you're not exactly sure how you're going to get there. So just if you've got an idea, back yourself and just have a go. Just keep going, keep trying. But don't, you can't really follow a well-worn path.
Yeah, great. Jem, how can people find you, or where can people find you, and how can people reach out to you?
I'm still super accessible, man. You can reach out to me. The website, jemfuller.com, has everything on it, you know, and I've got free resources on there. I've got free books and free meditation courses and stuff. You get some stuff from me. You can contact me, email me. It comes into my inbox. I'm still thankfully pretty accessible. If you just want to follow me, I'd love it if you go and watch my TEDx talk. Just punch Jem Fuller into YouTube and you'll see my TEDx talk. Or you can follow me on the social channels, you know, Insta and Facebook and LinkedIn. They're all just Jem Fuller.
Yeah, I will put that as well into the show notes. And agree, the TED Talk we haven't mentioned, highly recommend to watch it. We are not spoiling it right now, but everyone who is interested in, hearing Jim talking at TEDx, look at the links in the show notes and you will find the TED Talk. Jim, thank you very much for spending the time with me. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jens.